You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Jerry Kearns. Jerry, thanks so much for being with me today.
My pleasure.
Jerry, let's talk about what you're working on now. I want to talk about your history, of course, and a number of things, but what's happening in your studio right now to jump right into that?
I'm just finishing a series of 8 7-foot square paintings, and the origin stems from my wife, Nora, being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer 3 years ago, and I really have been painting my way back to some sort of contact with this reality with those paintings. And they're metaphorical. They're not direct images of Nora, but they are based in general in the same sort of iconographic figures that I've used historically in my paintings to talk about the individual in relationship to the social cultural context that we find ourselves in. So that's what's going on now.
Let's talk about that a little bit before going backwards, because that's very powerful. And how are you dealing with that, or what is the content of that? Because that's of course a very difficult thing to face.
It certainly
psychologically,
is.
Yep. Physically. Or, I mean, my mother died of pancreatic cancer, so that kind of strikes me right away. But how are you? What does it mean to face it? What does the imagery mean? What's the content, and how is that put together?
Well, Nora York was a singer and composer and band leader, and we both share a kind of understanding of the purposes of art to be about storytelling and narrative. We also shared together the idea that art is a healing process, and that we can use it to talk about the individual reality as well as the larger social reality. Of course, Nora being diagnosed with such a horrible disease is terrible in itself, but she also is a victim of the 9/11 air that we breathed following the disaster in 2001. Nora was a professor at NYU and taught downtown near the crash site in the months following. We knew the air was foul, but we believed the lies of Giuliani and other George Bush and other politicians that said, you know, go to work and breathe and shop. Unfortunately, 16 years later, we paid the price with Nora's life. When we became aware of the diagnosis, we talked a lot, of course, about how to go forward, knowing what we knew and how much time we had and so forth. So we decided to collaborate on an exhibition that was held at the Mike Weiss Gallery, my painting installation of wall murals in the summer of 2015. And Nora did a concert at Joe's Pub at the Public Theater in New York. We saw those two events as interrelated with each other, as well as the social media and live streaming and so forth. So it allowed us to fall back on our art, and really the only thing we knew, in order to really maintain sanity in the face of what we were facing. These paintings that follow Nora's death are really a continuation of the notion that art is about survival. Art is about getting to the deepest, most core meanings of our existence. And, of course, nothing has ever moved me more or reshaped my life more than what happened to Nora. So the paintings just kind of naturally came from me as a way to kind of touch reality, and also, I think, really to, reshape Nora to a metaphysical, transcendent reality through the act of painting and repainting her on a daily basis. That's the origins of these paintings, and it's a continuation of that idea that art is here to serve a deeper purpose than the society currently places emphasis on, a deeper, more sure. humanitarian purpose.
So to talk a little bit about that show at Mike Weiss, mm-hmm. that was Diva's Song, correct? Diva's Song, that was the one you're referring to?
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the imagery in that show, because that's also wonderful mm-hmm. that, you know, that was a collaboration and, yes. you know, right in the midst of, I guess, kind of all the darkness. In that show, there were mm-hmm. murals on the wall. These were painted directly on the wall. Is that correct?
That's right.
It was narrative in the sense that there was a number what do you call it, text blocks, when a character is speaking and you're being led through a kind of a story, aren't you?
Correct. The story, Nora, for several years, had been very involved in the opera Tosca, Puccini's wonderful opera, and the story of Tosca, which is a story of a singer, her ambitions, her lover, who is a radical artist, a political intervention, a local potentate who is chasing her and using power to try to corrupt her, pull her away from her art and her love. And so the story mapped itself to our own personal situation in a kind of interesting way to both of us. So the text in the thought bubbles that you're referring to are actually, in some cases, direct quotes from the lyrics of Tosca, and in some cases me altering them slightly to build our story. The characters in the installation are Sugar, which is a kind of cowboy hero, kind of hapless figure, the Diva, which is the female woman singer. And the story is about our plight. As one goes through the exhibition, you encounter a kind of environmental, contextual understanding of how we saw art and our life in relationship to it.
And in the context of Tosca, you know, the opera, it's also a tragedy, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we were very deeply in the middle of a great tragedy, and we knew it. And, you know, knowing your fate in that kind of horrible way, you have to figure out some way to wake up and stay sane and by embodying ourselves in the work and in the telling of this story was our way of doing it, was our way of getting through what we had to face and leaving a cultural artifact or a record of how we felt, what happened to us, what took place.
Yeah. And to talk about the kind of, you know, healing, which seems like an odd word to use in the context of the show, mm-hmm. Diva's Song in 2015, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all that you're going through, I mean, it would almost seem like art is kind of impotent in that situation, but in fact, and what I'm asking is to speak a little bit to the healing. What did that mean in terms of the show completing, ending mm-hmm. for you and Nora at that time? Let's say when the show mm-hmm. was over, did that help in a kind of I guess existential or personal, you know, way
yes.
to face what seems to be unfaceable?
Yes. Well, on the intimate side, Nora said to me and on several occasions in the process that doing this together was in effect saving her sanity and allowing her to get up each day and go forward. So the act of the creativity together, the act of encountering embracing in some ways and struggling with our situation, the act itself was healing and positive. You chase back the origins of art, you know, you can go back it certainly comes out of ritual and belief and the desire to control reality, i.e. hunting and so forth, the desire to reshape the physical world into something that we have some control and say over. Fundamentally, we were operating at that origin level of the meanings of art, in my mind. And I think so in Nora's mind. We both believe very strongly in an art that engages the human story, that carries along a record of what it was like to be us, in our case, at a particular moment in time with a particular set of circumstances that we were trying to make some sense of and come to some resolve in a world of madness that we had no power over ultimately.
Right, and in that show at Mike Weiss, that was all installations on the wall. It didn't seem like that could be
Nothing was for sale. And all of the paintings, there were 10 of them in all, were erased and painted over at the end of the exhibit. And Nora had a concert, as I mentioned, called Diva's Song at Joe's Pub, which was live streamed and recorded. And we made a recording, Nora's last recording, was made in the gallery one evening of Nora singing Vici d'Arte from the opera. Vici d'Arte is the lyrics of Vici d'Arte are water in the encapsulated in the thought balloons on the wall. It's basically, I've lived my life for art and love. I've lived my life to give and entertain. Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening now to me? What have I done? That's the kind of the plea of Tosca. As she also, as we know, she loses her lover through a set of bizarre miscommunications and then takes her own life.
Right. And to ask just about the gallery itself, so Nothing Was For Sale, is that a gallery that represented you? How did they support that show and make that happen? Because that's quite extraordinary as well.
It is. Mike Weiss is an amazing guy for me. I had two shows with Mike over a period of about 3 years. Unfortunately, he closed last year, shortly after Nora passed away. But Mike had asked me if I would like to take the gallery over in the summer months and do some mural painting. I had, my previous show in 2014, I had several mural paintings on the wall as well as canvases. And I liked the idea of a show that wasn't for sale, that would be up for a period of time and then disappear. And unfortunately, as I was conceiving the show, Nora was diagnosed. And my immediate thought was, Nora and I have to do this together. And my second thought was that Tosca and Nora's work with the music over the past few years was the absolute natural content and context for us to explore together. And that's how it came about. Mike was very generous in offering us that space for 2 months, and I'm forever thankful to him for that.
And so he was your dealer. Is he still your dealer?
Yeah.
Or
I'm currently, no, Mike went out of business. Mike was closed in 2016, and I'm currently talking to another gallery. Actually, this week, I have an interview with some friends at another gallery that I'm interested in. We'll see how that goes.
And to talk a little bit about I want to go back a little bit to talk about the beginnings of your work, but after that show, how did your work continue? I would think that's a completely different place that you're operating from, aside from the grieving, which I guess in a way never ends.
No. Never ends.
What was happening to your work after that?
Well, I've always worked I've always made art as a kind of salvation in some way. As a psychiatrist once said to me, it's your religion. You go there and create a reality that you're in charge of. And I think a lot of artists work that way. We create a world. I had nothing to hold on to losing Nora. It was an unimaginable reality, a nightmare that became reality. And the only way I was able to fight my way back was through working and going to the studio and going to the studio. I knew I wanted to somehow honor Nora. I knew I wanted to somehow honor my love and understanding of her extraordinary personhood, and I knew I needed to paint, and those things all came together over a period of about a year and a half, and got clearer and clearer to me as to what it would look like and so forth. But it was through the process of working and being able to be in touch with her in a spiritual way through the work that I relied on to come forward. Yep.
So did the content change because of that? Was that a different kind of story you were
sure.
telling them?
Sure. I don't work in a kind of often it's not exactly a linear kind of narrative or something. It's a number of kind of emotional circumstances that come out of having gone through what we went through together and what I now go through without her. So there are I follow kind of iconic imagery in a way. I'm very interested in the history of American painting and imagery, so I'm referring back to a kind of hero image, male hero image. At the same time, he is often in a situation that he's not in control of, and is larger than him. I don't know any other way to talk about the imagery except to let you see it. But that's the general take on the paintings that I take with me.
And to move backwards a little bit, the mm-hmm. kind of imagery that you're using, which is, you know, mm-hmm. pop narrative imagery, where mm-hmm. did that start? How did that begin?
I was a college student in the 60s, and in the latter part of the 60s, everything just kind of started to blow apart in the culture. I looked at a lot of the work that was going on, like Hans Hacke's real estate show at MoMA, Joseph Beuys. I read Lucy Lepard, Dematerialization and Cultural Feminism. I was influenced by Art Provera. In the general culture, there was Marshall McLuhan's global village idea, the great California poet, philosopher, Alan Watts. I was influenced by the Frankfurt School, particularly Otto Rank and Art and Artists, Carl Jung, and his study of archetypes, Walter Benjamin, Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction. I became convinced that my path would be following this general kind of idea that art is about the development of the human personality, and that its central role is to examine that personality in the social, cultural, political context within which it exists. So I turned to popular imagery, what people call pop art imagery, cartoons, newspapers, television, and so in Bible imagery at the time. And I began to take them out of their original context and through the process of collage, basically juxtapose the belief systems of the culture using the popular language of pop culture as an alphabet by which we can understand the development of personality and identity in our culture. You know, clearly today, with the horrible reality we're in, you can see the power and force of the control of imagery and the manipulation of imagery and the confusion created by people who are trying to undermine any kind of core or central belief or truth. So throughout my career, I followed that idea of looking at my reality at particular historical periods, engaging a personal narrative within the context of the larger social political things. And it, as reality would have it, all of these themes of race and racism, class, gender bias, and so forth, they don't go away. They just continue to evolve and take different forms at different moments. And so when I look back at my work, I think of it as a kind of psychological history painting. Of course, it's an approach from an individual to this sort of idea, again, that I keep mentioning of the context within which the mind sits. And that remains true today with these paintings that I'm doing about Nora. There are interjections of imagery that one would recognize from what's going on in our world today in relationship to these very personal, powerful icons of loss and longing and desire and so forth.
So even though, you said paintings of Nora, so today still, I mean, in a sense you're making paintings of Nora that are continually influenced by her and the relationship, or correct me if I'm wrong, and you're also using the, maybe in some of what you typed into, what Carl Jung is talking about, archetypes, struggles that we all go through, one of which certainly is grieving and loss and coping with that. Is that the case?
Absolutely, right. And none of that, from my perspective, all of that takes place within its specific historical context. So the sort of dropping into that personal reality, if you will, or personal iconography, or recognizable imagery from our time, from this particular historical moment, recognizable conflicts, recognizable characters, and so forth. I think my long-term goal is just this embedded idea that we are who we are as a result of, what we know and what we don't know. And who we are is controlled by those who feed us what we know and what we don't know. So that underlies all of my personal story and iconography.
And which archetype is about, just to be clear, it's about the kind of propaganda we're fed, right? In images and text and otherwise,
totally.
In a sense?
Totally. Yeah, propaganda, I would use the word lies, particularly in the situation that we're in now. What's happening, I think this country is... This is a watershed moment, not unlike 1968 or 9/11 or earlier periods of time. And what we're coming to grips with is the dissipation over the last 50 years of a central core of ideas and beliefs that ring true to the society. They've wrung it dry or empty, so to speak. And in my mind, Trump is simply a manifestation of 50 years since Richard Nixon went south with his so-called Southern strategy, and Ronald Reagan brought right-wing entertainment into politics back in the 80s. It's all there. It's laid out over the years, and I've been trying to paint that, and I still am trying to paint that.
I really appreciate you talking about all this, Jerry. I want to ask you the last question now, which is what you're reading now. I'm always curious, and I'm curious with you as well.
I try to write down. I'm listening more than reading. I'm rather busy, but I really enjoy the Audible book world now. And see, Sapiens is a book that I've listened to several times recently. I really find it's a wonderful synopsis of the history of human development. I've been listening to the Da Vinci book that recently was out. There's a Ben Franklin one that was out. I like Bukowski. I listen to Bukowski. A variety of narrative fiction kinds of books. Mm-hmm. I like David Sedaris. I listen to him. Like that kind of world.
And you're listening to these all through like Audible while you're working,
yeah,
driving.
Working, driving, trying to go to sleep.
Right.
Trying to go to sleep, I find them very helpful, especially some of the softer voices. I bought that thing about the Trump family recently. It drove me insane. That's one I haven't been able to listen to very long.
Right. Well, Jerry, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure and a gift to talk to you.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.